Hi, I'm Sandy Robinson. I'm your host of RevOps Unboxed. I'm here with Ian Grace, who's the VP of Sales at Ocrolus. Today, Ian's going to talk to us all about how RevOps and sales operations should work together hand in hand. Excited to talk to you today, Ian. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Thanks, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be here today. I have had the pleasure of working for Ocrolus as VP of Sales since January of last year, but I've been in sales and in the operations game for 23 years now, I guess, to date myself. It's crazy when I think about it. But yes, I've been in sales for over 20 years and been in the operations and managing in and around operations as well for like the last six. At Ocrolus, we are a data automation company. We assist our partners make high stakes, lending decisions and, property management decisions, with ease and speed and fraud protection. We pride ourselves on our 99%+ accuracy and really, are a leader in our space. So it's been a pleasure working for the company for the last, 15 months or so. And like you said, I think I'm in a unique position as our VP of sales, overseeing RevOps and sales ops. Our sales development team, inside sales team, enablement. So I've got a unique sort of, I think, in many companies, view of things where I can kind of have a wide horizon, so to speak, over which I can, help and work with a great team for.
No, that's great. I think having your perspective on the show is really going to be important because, as a RevOps leader, as an enablement leader, working with a head of sales is, a big part of our jobs, right? So also depending on the company stage and where the development is in the, in the business, if it's earlier stage, you're still really focusing on top line and pipeline and things like that. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, your thoughts on this relationship and your experience with working together with revenue operations and then, in the broader sense, and then also you're more focused on sales operations.
Yeah. I mean, I think, the big thing that our CRO, Andrew Raines, he's, he's been around the block for a long time and he's grown a lot of companies. And, I think he was the one that really instilled in me a real appreciation for the value of RevOps when we worked at our previous company, Automotive Mastermind. And so I would say, a big thing that we do, Sandy, is every meeting begins with metrics, right? So we lead every meeting, whether it's our AE sales meeting weekly or our account management meeting, our ramp meetings, which are all focused on that, our marketing pipeline meetings. I mean, we have so many, five or six kind of departmental meetings every week, and every one of those meetings begins with metrics, right? So we really see kind of RevOps and data as the sort of single source of truth off of which we should be driving and making our decisions. And I think, by having that sort of alignment from CRO to VP to, down or even CEO all the way down the belief there, that sort of allowing RevOps to be the through line through every department and there not being any sort of silos there has been a key part of our success in, kind of really building upon what we've got with RevOps.
Nice. So is the RevOps function, so you're under the CRO, RevOps then is the head of RevOps is kind of your peer or is it dispersed throughout
he reports. Yeah, he's a great, phenomenal director of RevOps, Andrew Barnes, great guy and upcoming leader and definitely, expert in the space. He's been doing this for his whole career. He's about 30 or so, but he's spent about 10 years in the space and he's phenomenal. He reports into me, but from a management style in general, I don't necessarily kind of look at things that way, like me, but more that we work together. But yes, he's phenomenal, and he's definitely again we work together on so many things, whether it's comp planning with finance or territory planning or, you know, all these things. He's such a great collaborator. I think that's a key part of this too. Andrew is such a phenomenal collaborator that he makes it so easy to work with him that people inherently, and he's such a likable guy, inherently marketing wants to work with him. You know, our sales development leader that reports into me, you know, wants to, everybody wants to work with Andrew because he's such a great guy and he knows his stuff and he, everybody truly believes that he's there to help, which he is. And that, you know, he's got the goods to back up that, you know, I'd like to help you and he can.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think for me as a RevOps leader, obviously sales leaders, they're, you know, one of our customers essentially, mm-hmm. right? So it's not always easy to make a sales leader happy, right? So I think in some organizations, there's a lot of friction, right, between particularly with the sales leaders, I think, at least I found in my experience, right, they don't always understand, like, well, why do you need to fill the thing out in the CRM? You know, I didn't do that when I was a rep. Why do I need to do it now? And those are the kind of things that I think frustrate RevOps leaders. And, you know, regardless of the reporting structure, if they report to the sales leader, if they don't report to the sales leader, if they're in a different part of the org, it's a common frustration point. So I guess I'd love to hear your perspective on that, because it sounds like you have a very collaborative relationship with the folks that are in the on the operations side and enablement as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Salesforce, which is, you know, is who, you know, what we use. I mean, we do everything we can, I think, to keep our Salesforce hygiene, you know, as clean as we can, right? Everything is being driven out of that. Our ABM efforts, you know, all of the reporting and the metrics that we're using, everything we, you know, deal coaching, everything kind of drives out of Salesforce. So it's very much a system of garbage in, garbage out, right? So I think that, you know, a big part of that is just sort of having a universally accepted sort of approach that is the case, right? Like, and the expectation is that you fill these things out and the expectation is that it's done, you know, vigilantly and with discipline and, you know, every week and, you know, and that sort of thing. And yeah, you know, of course there's times where you got to poke, you know, some folks to update an op or something like that, you know, but generally speaking, I would say, because of that expectation, because we're of that alignment, you know, very little friction exists between our sales, you know, our account executives, our account managers, and RevOps with regards to, you know, kind of Salesforce hygiene. It's all, you know, especially on the account management side, you know, everything lives in Salesforce. So all notes, you know, go in there and all updates. So everything is driven out of there. So we really are all aligned on, you know, if you're dropping the ball there, you're it's a major ball to be dropped.
That's great. And I think it's music to a lot of people's ears listening, because if the leader does it, then their people will do it, right? And I think it's really important. Now, that being said, as the sales ops leader working with the sales leader, I think it's our job to make sure it's easy to do. Yeah. It's clear, it's documented, like you're not having trouble doing it. So I think that's where that partnership really comes in. But you know, the fact that you're really leaning into it and aligned with your sales operations and revenue operations, I think is important, because the, you know, people do what you do. They emulate you, and you know, it's the whole, like, you have to lead by example versus do as I say, not as I do. So I think that is really big. And that is a friction point in a lot of companies, right, that aren't aligned. And I think alignment is one of the biggest frustrations in the role of revenue operations, because it touches so many different people and orgs are structured differently. It may be dispersed and reporting to different parts of the organization. So I think that's really important in terms of that collaboration, those collaboration efforts. So
yeah, for sure. I think too, it helps obviously that, you know, our rev org is about 45 or so people, you know, and so when we think about that it certainly makes it manageable to maintain sort of lower or no silos, you know, and facilitating collaboration is a lot easier. You know, I think if we were some New World Order, you know, 10,000 employee company, you know, obviously it'd be a little bit different, but the foundational principles wouldn't be, but our ability to adhere to them certainly would be a little bit more difficult. But we have the luxury of, you know, having a smaller team and a team that's, like I said earlier, the key thing is alignment, right? Like, you know, we have alignment, we set expectations, we have some accountability there. And so when, you know, when things aren't done the way that we need, you know, and we give a little bit of poke, you know, the you know, it kind of course corrects and you know, we ultimately can maintain, you know, pretty strong team sort of culture and cohesion.
I love it. I love it. So do you have any, maybe like a real scenario that you've worked through or a story you can talk about, example of this type of collaboration, maybe initiative you worked on or something?
Yeah, you know, I think a big thing, you know, we're working on now is we started our sales territories, right? So here's a good example. So, you know, when I think a year ago, if you look back a year ago, we were doing our sales territories sort of based upon company size and geography, you know, and what we've come to find, you know, within our ICPs and where we might have more opportunities, that it would make more sense to specialize and to have some, you know, sort of like a, we, you know, we work in the mortgage space, small business lending space, you know, banking, KYC, you know, account, forensic accounting, all these, you know, our ICPs, you know, consumer lending. And we found that, like, you know, if we specialize more, certainly with like a mortgage team and then sort of non-mortgage, that would be, you know, beneficial to, you know, pipeline and close win rates and such. You know, so as you can imagine, though, you take the country and you take it from where it was sort of based upon company size and geography, and then you have to reorganize the whole thing based upon industry. And then geography, it's a little bit of a Dagwood, right? You know, so I think that's a, you know, we were able to, you know, work fairly painlessly together, you know, Andrew and our senior sales associate, ops associate, Matt Bronin, also a good egg, work together to sort of do this in the right way so that when you're reallocating the, you know, the territories and creating new patches, it's equitable, right? No one gets their feathers ruffled, you know, and can still have enough tangible meat on the bone in a post transition to this new, you know, sort of setup as possible, right? I mean, that's the key thing. And, you know, I think Matt did a great job of trying to put himself in the shoes of the account executives. So in him kind of having that approach, which again is inherently a collaborative in mindset of trying to think about it. I'm going to create these territories for these sales, you know, team members. How are they going to feel? What does this look like? What is, you know, can I create as much parity out of the gate as possible, right? Like, and just his approach to that, I think, you know, was really great, right? And so as we've transitioned to that in the new year, there's been a little, you know, a little friction as there always is going to be with this sort of stuff. But generally speaking, I think it could have been so much worse. But I think because Matt took that approach of really trying to be very fair and equitable about it and not just sort of being, you know, a lot of RevOps, you know, guys and gals, it's just the nature of personalities and so how they're wired. They can be very black and white, you know that, right? Very analytical, very this is this. And, you know, if you take that approach on certain things, it's great. If you take it on other things, it could be really bad, right? Take out the human element from it and, you know, that could be bad. But what Matt, you know, definitely brought to this was the human element. I'm trying to maintain that wasn't just, okay, I'm going to cut this line and sort of gerrymander this territory to be what it's going to be, regardless of just this was the directive. And he was very great about sort of shading things and making sure that we tried to mitigate as much of the future friction or tension that could come out of a territory realignment that, you know, so many of us have been through territory realignments, have experienced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's always tough. I mean, change is hard, but when you start to uproot their territories and say, okay, these accounts are no longer yours, now these are yours, regardless, it's going to be hard. But if they're not getting something that is fair and equitable compared to somebody else, then you start having real problems, right? So I think it's definitely the responsibility of the, you know, both leaders in this scenario to make sure that the territories are fair and equitable and you're able to roll something out that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have to always have to keep the company in mind, keep the customers in mind, how are they best served, and then keep your team in mind as well. Like, so we you know, can retain the top talent and support their performance and support the top performers. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a great example. Territory, we've all done territory realignments and account changes, and the process itself is hard, right? Just even the logistics of figuring it out. But then the training and the change management that goes along with it is difficult too. So how do you work then? You mentioned enablement earlier when we were talking before we started recording. So how does that work in your org, and how does that play in with RevOps and your sales team?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because enablement at Aquilus is sort of like, I'll definitely call it a team sport, right? Heavy involvement with our product marketing team, heavy involvement from the actual product managers. We kind of sort of divide and conquer. So when we've got new things coming up, you know, from a product perspective, I will work with product marketing or the product managers directly. We're creating lesson leads. They're, you know, joining our weekly sales meetings. They're joining our weekly account manager meetings. They're, you know, so it's very much a collaborative sort of thing where all hands on deck. As a smaller company, I think we would love the luxury of having a specific person. This is all they do all day long is sales enablement. But at this juncture, we don't have that luxury. So it's sort of just kind of marshaling all of our resources and collaborating, working together to ensure that, you know, everybody is aware of, you know, pricing changes, product changes, roadmap, you know, and all of that. And our, you know, I think I work very closely with our CTO, you know, on that stuff and what's coming. So that gives me, again, the fortunate sort of ability to kind of help control and the messaging, getting to the sales team, knowing what, and to, you know, account management. So I think that makes, you know, everything more holistic in a way, because it's not like a single person. It's sort of everybody working together. And I think, you know, that has helped us. You know, I think it's certainly could be improved if we had the opportunity to bring on a specific person solely for that. But I think we've done a nice job of dividing and conquering, you know, when it comes to that for being a smaller team.
And the fact that you're recognizing the need for enablement is important, right? That you're sustaining, you're coordinating the training and making that stuff happen. I mean, I think you said you've been doing this a long time. So when I was a sales manager way back when, like, enablement wasn't even a thing. I did all the enablement. I did all the, you know, reporting. I figured out how to use a CRM. I made my decks. I did all the things. So I did all the rev ops. I did all the sales ops. I did all the enablement. So I think as a sales leader, we've got to recognize that. And when you're in a startup or you're in a smaller company, you still need to fill that function. You need to be the enabler also, and maybe the sales ops and the sales leader, right, all in one, until you can bring in those positions. So I think what you're saying here is really important. So for folks that are listening, if you're not in a company where you have enablement, you still need enablement, right? I mean, it sounds like that's your message, Ian, like you are the enabler, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree more. Like that, like, whether it is ongoing sales coaching or it is product sort of leveling up or softening the beaches as we're coming around the bend on a go-to-market, on, you know, a roadmap item, like, it's inarguable that you have to have sales enablement. you know, I think if you don't, you're really missing an opportunity. And I can't help but think that if you didn't have some level of sales enablement functionality in place, that you're kind of fumbling around in the dark. You know what I mean? Right. Like your sales team and account management and customer success, like no one's really up to speed on everything that's going on. You've got miscommunications happening. You could have over-promising and under-delivering happening. You've got, you know, missed sales opportunities because that thing that prospect is really interested in and really has them lean in and you know, kind of solves for their pain. Well, you're not aware that the product is about to fix that. And so you don't talk to it. And now you maybe disqualify that lead, or it's not as sexy to them, so they don't want to move forward because you didn't bring that up. You know, so I think, you know, if you're not, if you don't have some level of enablement, even rudimentary, you just got a real gaping hole. It's sort of hole in your back fence for the wolves to get to your chickens. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not good.
Right, right. You know? Like the spaghetti against the wall, right? Yeah. You're gonna spend all this time and money and creating cool materials that people will never use, right? Or stuff they're gonna forget in 30 days at the end of the day. So yeah. I think that's very strategic on your part. And in terms of planning, I mean, do you have future plans to build out your org?
I think, you know, it was when I first, what was interesting when I first was going to join the company was specifically for that, to be that person. And then through kind of a confluence of events just before I started it, you know, my role grew. And so I think, you know, it would certainly be, it's something that's been kind of on my mind and on my list of like my Santa's wish list, you know, Christmas list of things to my CRO, is definitely to try to have somebody specifically in that role. I think, you know, if we can achieve certain revenue goals and targets that we've got planned, it's certainly something that might be more tenable. But for, you know, it's on my list. It's just, you know, can we get there in the next 12 or 24 months? Maybe. You know what I mean? It's not impossible. I think, you know, like anything else, you know, Sandy, like money talks and revenue wins. So, you know, it solves all problems, right? More revenue.
Show me the money. Yes. Show me the revenue, right?
Yeah. Unlike the song, it's not more money, more problems. It's more revenue, less problems.
You know? Right. So exactly.
You can get more resources. So I think, you know, more revenue, more resources is always a good thing. So I think right for the time being, at least we'll keep doing what we're doing and try to, you know, white knuckle it to get to that revenue numbers we're looking for. And then we'll cross that bridge on the enablement side when we come to it.
Nice. Nice. I like that approach. I like that approach. So I'm burning here. So as a RevOps leader, I don't know any sales leader that doesn't have a secret spreadsheet that they take out of the CRM. So come clean here. Are you working in secret spreadsheets, or are you really like all in the CRM?
Honestly, I most about 95% of the time, I build, I've worked with Matt and Andrew to build the dashboards that I like to look at every day. And so because I'm sort of like this sort of Salesforce fundamentalist, you know, I try to, you know, like you said earlier, kind of live and die by that thing. And so, you know, occasionally what I end up doing in Excel is I'll export some of my kind of go-to reports because I like to manipulate them and
like some pivot tables.
Yeah, sort and zero in on things. So that's where kind of my Excel fixation gets sort of itch gets scratched. But generally speaking, you know, I've been able to work with Andrew and Matt to kind of really hone in on the like five or six dashboards that I really like to look at. And I just kind of check those. And, you know, only when it comes to like maybe the end of the quarter, or if I see something that's an anomaly or an outlier that I really want to like zero in on, you know, who's doing what with their clothes lost and that sort of thing, then I'll kind of take it, I'll pull it out and then start to like get surgical with it.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. But you're not managing your pipeline secretly in a spreadsheet and then transferring it back in, right? Yeah. That's good. I mean, and I always take it upon myself, like if sales leaders feel like they have to do that, then I need to set the CRM up better and understand like what they're using it for. Because it's usually one of two things. It's either your CRM, whether it's Salesforce, HubSpot, or whatever, isn't built in such a way that you're getting what you need. So you're feeling like you've got to extract the data. So that's one thing, which it doesn't sound like that is for you. And then the other is people are just, they don't want to change. They don't want to try. And so I track, this is kind of a secret I do. I track exports. So like in HubSpot, we use HubSpot so we can see the user activity. We can see like, you know, they're logging in. We can see how many, you know, we can see the logins, which if you're using SSO isn't too you know, reliable. Sometimes you can stay logged in for a long time if you leave your computer on. But the other thing, you know, like what are they updating? What are their habits? Like, so I track all this and I can see like it shows, it has a whole column for export. So if you're exporting a list and so I'm always trying to see like, okay, every month, like, okay, we had like 20 exports this month. Now we only have, you know, three, we had three last month. So like, to me, that's like an indicator of people either are just not paying attention or they're getting what they need. So they're not feeling the need to export it. So
that's a great barometer, Sandy. Like, honestly, like I've never thought about that. I never thought about tracking exports and, you know, that, but what a great barometer, like you said, because if you see 20 go to 10 and then 10 go to 6, and you know that over the course of, let's say, that 6 or 8 week period, that you put concerted effort into dashboard building or report building, or, you know, hey, everybody, give me a report that you really would like to see. And then that you're actually getting that sort of momentum and keeping people where you want them to be, sort of like being the gutter bumper to keep them from exporting. That's a great barometer. I never thought about that.
Yeah, it's time saving too. Like I don't want them to have to do that. So I'll look just because, and I'll be curious, like, what are they exporting? Cause I can see, you know, what data export they made, and then I'll go check the report and see like, well, why? Cause we try to make things, especially for salespeople, like where you can inline edit, right? So if you're in your pipeline and you want to change next steps, you can just like edit it right there. Like, so those are the kind of things that I try to do for the leaders, but you know, it's something that I talk to a lot of rev ops and sales ops and marketing ops folks. And it's kind of the same pain. It's like, well, why aren't they doing it in CRM? And it's like, well, my thing is it's one of those two things. Either we haven't set it up right for them, or they're just not willing to change and they're just used to doing it a certain way. So, anyway, so my little secret is out.
I love that secret. I'm going to take that. It's funny. I'm going to write that. I actually wrote that down on my little remarkable notebook here while you were saying that, like, because I'm going to talk to Barnsey on Monday about that and say, hey, like, can we see that in Salesforce? And if so, I'd be very interested to see what it is and what's getting exported and by whom. Sort of very big, very big brother. I'll let him know. Big sister Sandy, let me know how to pull the big brother.
So what do you, as we wrap up here, this has been great. I'm sure we can talk all day about this stuff. What would you like to leave the listeners with, you know, any sort of like the way you lead or live by, or just anything, any sort of actionable things you can leave people with? It'd be great.
Yeah. I mean, I think a couple things. I think that our organization is proof positive that there doesn't have to be an inordinate amount of tension between RevOps and sales, right? Like that it can be a really nice homeostasis where everybody is working stronger together, as long as everyone is aligned and expectations are set and everyone's, you know, kind of wanting the same things, right? And I think we're at Ocrolus, we're proof positive of that within our Rev organization. I think a key thing is also, you know, the collaboration piece, right? I think that for me as a leader, it's a big part of my, you know, I like we were talking about before, you know, what Brené says, you can't have more than two sort of core values. And my core values, I would say, are consistency and authenticity. But if Brené were to allow me to have a third, I would say it would be, you know, to be collaborative, right? Like collaboration is probably a third core value. Like, you know, listening to your people, working with your people, soliciting advice and bringing them in on process building and all of that, you know, gets greater buy-in. And so when you work together with everyone and you listen to each other and then take action off of that listening that shows one another that you're hearing them, I think that's a key thing that has worked well for our RevOps and sales sort of, well, whether it's RevOps and marketing, RevOps and sales, RevOps and account management, you know, the key piece to that has been collaboration and you know, Andrew and Matt's willingness to go that extra mile, take every dumb question. Why isn't Salesforce doing this, right? You know, all of those things and being patient. But that's a key thing, right? The more collaborative and open you are to working with one another, the smoother things can be. So, you know, I think if you start with that mentality up front, like that I'm in this to win this with them and they're in this to win this with me. If you start there and you live there, I think that you'll have fewer problems, you know, than those organizations or those structures that don't, you know. I mean, I have the privilege of being kind of over a lot of this stuff, which maybe makes a little bit cohesion more, you know, easier but in that way. But the key thing, really, what really greases the wheel is everybody's aligned on collaborating and sort of this stronger together kind of mentality. And I think that that's really been a major driver for the RevOps, sales, account management, marketing, you know, customer success sort of gel.
I love it. Alignment and collaboration and make sure you're listening to your people.
Yep.
Great stuff today, Ian. I really appreciate you being on the podcast. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
And thank you. You got it. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed. Have a great day. This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.